Hello, this is Ricky Morton, one half of the 8-time World Tag Team Champions, the Rock and Roll Express, and you're listening to Tap Out Podcast Network. You show us everything you've got. You keep on dancing and the room gets hot. You drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy.
Hello and welcome to the Pro Wrestling Personified Podcast. I'm your host, Lewis Carlin, and we're part of the Tapped Out Wrestling Podcast Network. And let me tell you, man, I am absolutely super excited today, man. I'm interviewing today on the show one of my absolute heroes, a guy I grew up watching, one of my all-time favorites. The word legend is an understatement when it comes to my next guest. Please help me welcome one half of not one of the greatest, but the greatest tag team in the history of professional wrestling, the Rock and Roll Express. Please help me welcome Ricky Morton. Ricky, welcome to the show, sir.
Wow, Lewis. What an introduction that was. Really appreciate that. You kind of remind me of a guy that other day, you know, he told me, he said, Ricky Morton, I have been watching you on TV for 35 years. And I told him, I said, fella, don't you think you might need to change the channel? I don't know. Lewis, what's up? And it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. And I got to say, I grew up watching you, like I said, throughout the 80s, a teenager. And one of, like I said, one of my heroes, you're an absolute legend. And it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show today, Ricky. Really appreciate you doing it. You're making a fan's dream come true today, Ricky.
Well, thank you, Lewis. Did you ever get to see Robert and I live in action?
I grew up in New York, so I wasn't able to get to, I didn't get the chance to see any live shows, but I watched anytime you guys were on TV, and we're going to get into the Ric Flair feud a little bit. I watched Midnight Express against Ole and Arn, against the Russians, again, huge, huge fans. And again, I'm like, when I spoke to you on the phone the other day, my heart was racing, and it's racing right now. Oh. Huge fan.
Well, thank
huge
you,
fan.
Man. That's a great compliment, but understand, man. In the world of wrestling, that's who I am. I am Ricky Morton. I dedicated my whole life to professional wrestling. You know, my dad was a professional wrestler, but then he became a referee that was in the Memphis area.
Okay.
Who I started, but you know, I'm like everybody else, and believe me, I still believe in dreams. I believe in everything. I had school day at Canada, and I had a guy there named Josh Gary from Ring of Honor. He stopped in, and it was unbelievable. And he tells me, he said, after all these years, you still have a passion for our business. And man, I do. I like to watch the young guys. I like to see them progress in our business. And but first of all, Lewis, what they got to understand is before anybody can even be a wrestler, they got to understand what our business is about. Sometimes it's really hard to explain. See guys nowadays that they don't understand, you know, and I always try to tell these people, man, you know, before you can be a professional wrestler, your heart's got to be into it, because it don't take one person to make a business. It takes everybody that's here to have one good show. And sometimes, like I just told you, it's really hard to explain that, but I hope you understand in wrestling that you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. I just want to get going with the questions here, because I know you're pressed for time. I just want to talk about your school first, the School of Morton. I just want to know, how did that school come about, and how long have you been operating the School of Morton?
Well, it's right here, be our fifth year. It's always a dream of mine. Me and a fellow named James Strange, him and his wife, they helped me get it going, you know, and you got to understand where it's like the Field of Dreams. We built a school in a little town called Chucky, Tennessee, which everybody out there, you could go on my Facebook, School of Morton.
Okay.
And, check it out. We have a great show, but I was going to tell you, it's like the Field of Dreams. We built our, and it's not but two buildings in Chucky, and one of them is my school, and everybody always asks me, God, what you build it way out here for? But, you know, if you build it right, then they would come. And today, we was packed down there today. You know, like I said, I had the guy from Ring of Water down here talking to my kids and working out with them in the ring, and along with myself. And I started out with a homemade rink. The first night I opened up, nobody showed up.
Okay.
Then I got one student and two students to, now, man, I imagine we got anywhere from 30 to 40 in between here, students.
Okay.
We, with their own Sundays, Tuesday nights, and Thursday nights. That's people today come in from Kansas City. I've met them out in Amarillo, Texas, a couple of times and did a couple of shows with them, and they were over here in this area. So they stopped by my school. We had a great time in Georgia's.
Now, I always want to ask him, like, what can an aspiring wrestler expect when he decides to sign on, he or she decides to sign on with the School of Morton? Well, what can they expect? Like, like a typical day through the School of Morton, if you could take us through a typical day.
Thank you, pardon. I missed you on that one.
You know, I just like, if a wrestler is looking for a school, like, what can they expect when
yeah,
they
but,
sign
but,
on?
Yeah, but see, this is, well, it's not what to expect. You know, you gotta, if there's 1,000 wrestling schools, but there's only a few good ones.
Okay.
See, and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to take that away from, you know, the Dudleys, they have a great school. Tommy Dreamer has a great school. You know, and you can't beat the Performance Center. You know, that has to go.
Sure.
But there's a lot of great schools. But you see, these are guys that have worked in our business. These are guys that know what it takes to be a professional wrestler. You know, I see some guys that think they know, but they don't know. And they don't understand. And that's what's made my school successful. Because when they come there, I do learn them. I take a guy that's been wrestling on the circuit for 5 years. And which you really still don't understand because he had to have been around people like, and don't get me wrong, I'm not patting myself on the back, but he's not been around people that low that take the time to teach them. It's not about getting your stuff yet. It's not about this, you know, and it's about learning. And I'm starting back over to repeat myself. It's learning what our business is really about. So we're entertainment. You got to make people. When you're in that ring, you got to reach out to that crowd and get down in their soul to make them understand what we're doing. And when you learn that, I call it the magic. When you learn that magic, man, it's, you know, you can have, and trust me on this, when you learn that magic, you can have them people eating out of your hand. You know, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. It's how you put something together. You know, Everybody in the world can leapfrog and drop keys and, that's in our business and do a Hurricane Carana. But there's only a few that understand our business and know how to work. And because, you know, we work shows, and I'm on the independent circuit. You gotta understand, I keep a lot of shows I come back to once a month and stuff like that. And you got to keep those people interested. See, our job is to bring those people back in the next show. And then if you're on TV, man, you learn how to keep those ratings up. You know, it's two different stories, two different ball games, really. But that's what my School of Morton's about. I mean, you know, I can teach you the independent way, and then if you're getting ready to go to the big time, you know, because right there, you know, you got 4 or 5 minutes on TV, buddy. You got to get the most out of you can in 4 or 5 minutes. Eliminating stuff, learning. I call it learning the ropes. How's that?
All right, there you go. There you go, man. I always was curious, because I know when I'm doing research and listening to your interviews, I know it was Jerry Lawler that came up with the idea of teaming you and Robert to become the Rock and Roll Express. Did you ever think it was going to get as huge as it did when you first came together with Robert?
Well, when I first started, I didn't, because and I understand we were in Memphis and we were playing second fiddle. The five best ones, and I gotta say they were over. They were a great tag team, and I knew Jarrett wasn't going to let Robert and I get by them. But when we left, and I got to think, you know, you heard of Bill Superstar Dundee.
Yeah.
You know, he was the booker for Bill Watts in Louisiana. And Bill believed in us. You know, Robert and I were a tag team that we knew how to work. We knew what it took to get the people back there all the time. And a lot of times in our business, people get starstruck. You know, you always got to understand you can always be replaced. And some people didn't realize that. But, yeah, Jerry Lawler, he gave us a break. Jimmy Hart, you know, he's the one that came up with the name Rock and Roll Express. We all put it together, really.
Okay.
But, you know, we left Memphis, the Jerry Lawler area. It's when Robert really hit it real big. We started, we hit it off in Louisiana. And where did we go? I'm telling you, you know, Bill Watts didn't like smaller guys. When we got there, and we had great guys to work with. That's another thing for a second. You know, you had great workers. Everybody in the business was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. You had a legendary feud with the Midnight Express. I mean, I could watch you and Robert against the Midnight Express. I never get tired of your matches against them. And I've always wondered, how did that feud begin? I know you guys feuded before.
Yeah, but it's the same thing, you know. Bobby and Dennis were in Memphis too, the Midnight Express, and then the Rock and Roll Express. And it was so cool, though. That was Bill Dunn. Yeah, put this all together down there, and you know, then it wound up the Express, the first of the Expresses. But you got this, and understand this. This is how you draw money. You know, the Midnight Express went into Louisiana first, and you know, and they really, literally, they beat everybody from Magnum TA to Mr. You know, Wrestling 2, Jim Duggan, Junkyard Dog. I mean, they just didn't beat them. You know, in our business, they're different. You know, Jimmy Cornette and Cheating. And then they, the bell song. Then when Robert and I come in, you know, they're the Midnight Express. We're the Rock and Roll Express. But we work with the, and the same thing, sort of like what Jimmy Crockett did, because one thing works, we worked with the Russians when we first come in. It was Nikolai Volkov to Barry Dorso, Crusher Khrushchev. And when we come in with all American guys, and you know, this is all in the media. The Russians were having problems with them. So you got to understand, this is 1984. Times are different. Our business was still real sacred. They believed in what we've done. And, you know, it didn't hear nothing about entertainment. You didn't hear nothing like that. So, guys, when we come in and we wrestle these guys, and I was telling you this earlier, it takes everybody to make where it draws like that. Nikolai Volkov and Barry Dorso got us ready. I mean, gosh, wrestled him all over the territory, all different towns, and, you know, battles about, and then Robert would win, and then when the Midnight Express won the titles, man, they was over about to die. And Jimmy Cornette, even though they were working with everybody, he kept mentioning our name, throwing it in there and throwing it in there. You see, it's like a pyramid. You know, that we went through the hills on one side, and they went through the baby face on the other side until we met at top. And when we met at the top, dude, this was a dude that I think will go down in history in professional wrestling, the greatest feud of all times, the Rock and Roll Express versus the Midnight Express.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I've been a wrestling fan since about 1978, so my grandfather got me into introduced me to Bruno Sammartino in New York, and I could watch Rock and Roll Express against Midnight Express. I could watch it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I would never get tired of watching the Rock and Roll Express against the Midnight Express. It was such a legendary feud, and like I said, it was definitely One of the absolute greatest feuds of all time. And like I said, never can get tired of it. Also love your feuds, your matches with Ole and Arn Anderson. Those were absolutely fantastic. I remember, I think it was in August of 86, you had a match on TV, and just the fans were just beyond electric. I mean, when you guys came down to the ring, it kind of looked like you were struggling to get to the ring. Did you ever think that, hey, we might not be able to get it to the actual ring because the fans are swarming us?
You know what? That's when they beefed up the security a lot, because at that time they hadn't seen nothing like that. There was many a times, you know, that Robert and I would come out the back. You know, they ripped all our stuff off of us before we. You know, I get in the ring, I wouldn't have no shirt. I wouldn't have a bandana on this arm. But you know what, man, I wouldn't trade that for nothing. We were rock stars and really didn't know it. But it was so fun. I mean, like, you know what I was saying earlier, it was time in our business when it was different. Especially, you know, out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Because at that time, you know, you didn't have the Charlotte Hornets. You didn't have the Carolina Panthers football. When you came into Charlotte, North Carolina, there was a big billboard up there that said Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling every Saturday. And Robert Knight's picture was on it. And it was cool. I mean, it was – and I got ahead of it when we went to Carolina. We already had this – Bill Watts that we took with the Midnight Express over there, Dusty Rhodes, you know, a genius in our business. The Wizard, I call him. You know, we did all different stuff. And,
sure.
You know, but the scaffold matches we started in Louisiana. I see Dusty working into a good way with the whole world, seeing it all. And gosh, man, I wouldn't take nothing for those days. Being, you know, in just our business, so different, and I like it so much.
Sure. As I speak, you mentioned Dusty Rhodes. Another one of my favorite matches was when you and Dusty teamed up in the bunkhouse brawl, I believe, against Bubba Rogers and the Midnight Express. So that was another one of my favorite matches. I just loved when you hit Bubba Rogers with the double drop kick, and he went down, and the fan just blew the roof off the building when you hit that double drop kick on him.
Yeah, man, Bubba, great driver. Yeah, you know, you go back and look at TV and see him where he was just a big guy, and he got beat every week on TV, but just seen something in him and made him. He made him Jimmy Cornette's bodyguard.
I remember that well.
And see, that's the way characters are created. You know, Big Bubba Rogers, and then, you know, he went to WWE and, you know, became the
big boss man.
Big boss man. I mean, it was really cool. You know, it's just how our business works. Listen to some of these great minds in our business. It did a lot for us, man.
Was it true that at the height of your popularity that police officers had to be stationed at your house to keep the fans away? I was reading that. Was that true as well?
Wow. Yeah, and that's actually true. Yeah. I bought a house outside of Charlotte. And because then nobody knew where I lived at, but I bought a house. And when I bought a house, you know, really everybody knows. I woke up in the morning, and there had to be 500 people out in my front yard. They done took all my floor mats, my flowers, pots.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I'm serious. You can't even imagine that. The police had to, you know, and then I wasn't being mean, but I had to get the police there. I mean, I couldn't, it was filled up. You know, then the city of Matthews, Indian Trail, that was the same thing. You know, they had to come by my house couple of times a day to make sure people wasn't out there.
I also read a story that you and Robert were at an amusement park, and security had to close the amusement park because all the fans were mobbing the amusement park.
That's a Carowinds. That's right there. in South Carolina, right there in North Carolina, right at the border. Yeah, we used that purely. That was during the Rock and Roll lookalike contest. They won, and they won a free trip with us to Carowinds. And they come and got us and told us, man, we're going to, what they did is they're going to have to shut it down because of the people. But what they did was they took us out the back and with the kids. We got to come back that night when there was nobody in there. And when they closed it down and they kept it open for those kids to win it because of all the rides. I mean, there were so many people, you know, they knew we were going to be there. And gosh almighty, I mean, it's cool. It's hard really to explain stuff like that. But man, it was so awesome.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine, man. And I want to talk about Ric Flair for a bit because one of my favorite feuds was when you had the program with Ric Flair. And I gotta say, I would turn on the TV because the NWA would come on Saturdays in New York when we had gotten cable, and I would turn on the TV every Saturday praying that I would hear that Ricky Morton has defeated Ric Flair to become the new NWA champion. Unfortunately, that never came true. But I remember the feud started, if I'm not mistaken, after one of the you and Robert matches. Ric Flair was there. He gave you a training bra, and he says, "I like the big ones. You like the little ones." And then you wound up taking his glasses off and stomping on them. I always wondered, was that part of the were you supposed to do that with the glasses, or was that ad libbed? No.
That was a lot of things were ad libbed.
Okay.
At that time, Ric Flair, right? And now I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start this off. Matter of fact, I want to tell you, I have the training bra and I have the glasses that I broke. I never forget, I told Pee Wee Anderson when that angle was over, I said, go out and get all that, clean it up and bring it back to me. And I have all that. I kept it. Isn't it cool?
Okay.
That's the way my wrestling school is. I have stuff all over the walls. Tights with me wrestling Rick on the front cover. Well, I have that magazine with those tights in that frame, and you know, I have a bunch of stuff like that right here. But now, let's get into Ric Flair. I wrestled a lot of guys in my life, none of them that was better than the other ones, but Ric Flair was the real world heavyweight champion to me in our business. Rick, every night, and then this is what made Rick different from anybody else. If you paid to see Ric Flair, you made sure you got your money's worth. Another thing is he always done, too. Now, when he said he was a limo riding, all that stuff was true. Every bit of that stuff is true. That was Ric Flair. Like Hulk Hogan, and I'm not trying to knock Terry. Him and Ric Flair were two totally different people, two totally different styles of wrestling. You know, if I didn't go an hour time limit with Rick, we went 58 minutes in the match. And this was every night that I worked with him.
Yeah.
Rick was always like that, man. I mean, he gave you 100% of his money, no matter what. And this was 7 days a week. You know, Rick and I, we went 17 straight days, our broadways, but during that time, it was two on Saturday and two on Sunday.
Wow.
A lot of people don't know that. And then another thing I wanted to tell you is this is the time, and it was a moment in our business with politics. So here, I did beat Ric Flair for the world title, but I gave it back to him. I mean, not because of Ric, I gave it back. Because I didn't want to do what the promotion wanted me to do. That was one of the reasons for us leaving out of NWA, and it really was. They wanted me to keep the belt and split Robert and I us up, and I just told them, you're right, I won't have it.
Well, so you actually beat...
Story. A lot of people don't know that. Beg your pardon?
I was going to say, so you actually beat Ric Flair for the NWA title, so you... Is that correctly?
We did a finish where it went either way. And I had the belt, and I went in the back, and they took me in the room and told me that we're going to do this, do that. And I just gave the belt back to them, and it stayed as it was.
Oh, wow.
Nobody knew that. Nobody does. And it's cool. I mean, I gotta say that was things that happened in our business system, politics, that you say.
But, yeah, I remember as I was about 15 or 16 at the time. I remember how angry I was when they attacked you in the locker room and they rubbed your face on the floor.
Oh,
and,
you know what? We were just in Greensboro for Starcade for WWE.
Oh yeah, yeah.
During
okay.
Thanksgiving. Well, see, that's the same building that it happened in, and which they have added on to it. But that part was still there. When I walked in, and Rick was there with me, and then Rick walked downstairs. I said, Rick, you see that thing in the floor right there? That's where it all began, right there. And it was cool, reminiscing, and looking back. And when you're standing there and you're thinking of all the stuff that happened back then, man, and you're back in this building, gosh, it really blew my mind. Loved it.
Do you have any good or funny Ric Flair stories that you can share? Or?
Well, if you go on my School of Morton podcast,
okay.
They thought Ric Flair was great, but you know, this is a real, real long story about Ric falling off the boat. I did a podcast with Ric on my School of Morton. I like for you to listen to it because a lot of things I'm going to put into in my book. That's coming out, and this is going to be really cool. Oh, yeah, Rick was a part of your dude. I'm telling you. a lot of things you don't like to talk about on the radio and stuff.
Okay.
But, man, I had a great time with Rick. But the only thing I can say right now is all good things about Ricky. I go on my podcast and listen about the boat story.
Okay,
I really love for you to. And I'm not here, you know, to tell you, because when this right here could be a 2 or 3 part thing to come back on your show. I've been gone all day, I'm serious, and now I have to go get my son. My son's in theater, Gary Morton, my youngest son.
Okay.
Does really, really good. But, you just don't even understand what it means to me to talk to the people like that understand my business and understand who we are and what we are. I know that time goes by quick when you're having fun. I want to thank you for having me on your show.
Hey, my pleasure. My pleasure. Hey, I just want to say again, Ricky, huge fan of yours growing up. One of my heroes is a dream come true right now. I had a short list of wrestlers that I was hoping to interview in my lifetime, and you were on that list and made a dream come true of mine today. And thank you so much, Ricky.
I hope we can do it again sometime, okay?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, you and all your listeners, man, keep us alive. It's up to you fans to do all that. Listen to the stories. Listen to the show. Have a good night.
Okay, good night, Ricky. Take care, and God bless you.
You show us everything you've got.